This podcast is brought to you by WEDI, the preeminent national membership association for health IT guidance and collaboration. Recognized and trusted as a formal advisor to the Secretary of Health and Human Services, WEDI is the leading authority on the use of health IT to efficiently improve health information exchange, enhance care quality, and reduce cost. To learn more about WEDI member benefits and educational offerings, please visit our website, wedi.org. Welcome to the Collective Voice of Health IT, a WEDI podcast. Hi, everyone. It's Mike McNutt, Director of Education and Events with WEDI. Welcome back to the podcast. We're back on the AI train today. It's my pleasure to welcome Akshay Sharma, Chief AI Officer with Lyric. Akshay brings a rich tapestry of expertise and entrepreneurial spirit to the forefront of healthcare innovation. His leadership focused on driving Lyric's AI advancements, enhancing product and technology within the Lyric platform. Previously, Akshay was an entrepreneur in residence at Elevance Health, EVP of AI at ShareCare, CTO at DocAI, and head of product and engineering at Human API. If you want to talk AI, this is the right episode for you. Akshay, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me. Excited about this. So let's go.
Excited to have you. Now, Lyric is a leading AI healthcare technology company committed to simplifying the business of care. Lyric solutions leverage the power of machine learning, AI, and predictive analytics to empower health plan payers with pathways to increase accuracy and efficiency while maximizing value and savings. Akshay, let's start with the origin story. How did you get into healthcare? And secondly, how did you get into AI? It seems that these are two separate things for you that kind of came together as one, or, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but what brings you to my show today?
Thank you. Thank you, Michael. And that's a great question because I get asked about this. And the journey started more than a decade ago. So I was part of a contract research organization looking at late stage study data for diseases like cancer and cardio health diseases. What I was doing was building tools to understand patterns and data and sort of understand how the survival rate looks like. And these were very early days where we did not have concepts like data science and machine learning in production scale. We were using statistical models, simple graphs to explain how the sort of study is progressing and things like that. So that got me really excited about healthcare in general, because there was a quantitative way to look at healthcare, especially if we had data. That led me to sort of understand how can I sort of understand about my own health better. And guess what? There was no access to none of this data. The fact that I could go to a hospital, get a checkup done, and I would receive a piece of paper, that was the state of the art in 2012. Probably still true.
Yes.
Most people don't know that they, yeah, exactly. So most people don't know that there is a digital version of the data sitting somewhere in an EMR, for example. So that led me to sort of join Human API. And at Human API, we were sort of very ahead of times, I should say, because we believed in a fundamental vision that there should be one universal API for all types of health data, whether it's your device data, labs, pharmacy data, definitely EMR data, and over time, of course, claims data as well. But back in the day, in 2013, we really did not have a way to tap into that. And some of the changes that were happening during around that time were sort of meaningful use laws that were going in place, expecting providers, hospital systems to publish access to your EMR data through patient portals. So we use that as a way for facilitating patients or even users, somebody like me who may not have health conditions, but is interested in learning from my data, to be able to get that data. And meaningful use forced that data to be machine readable. So we would get these reams of XML data, but trying to make sense of that was still a problem, right? So we were looking at a lot of data engineering techniques to sort of harmonize that data and use that data for longitudinal studies and things like that. So Human API was sort of my stepping stone into the world of messy healthcare data, from PDFs, from XMLs, to legacy data, faxes sometimes. We got data sometimes in CDs, right? And some of these data, we had to like translate that to digital forms and build a sort of consistent model to represent the data. So that was sort of where, you know, I understood that the data is powerful, but getting the data aligned is really the hard problem. But once you solve the problem, the next step is how do you identify patterns in the data? How do you look at things that you could unlock, which, you know, normally a human cannot necessarily unravel? So that led me to AI naturally, because we were looking by, this is 2016, 2017, and I already had started seeing that, you know, deep learning models were able to like correlate and find nonlinear sort of information in sort of identify patterns in a nonlinear capacity. So that means that we could apply and build models and train models to see patterns that normally your, you know, like linear models don't see. So that led me into AI in 2016, late 2016 and early 2017. And then since then, there has been many revolutions in the world of AI, deep learning, leading to, of course, language models. Transformers were another breakthrough. So I've been applying AI since then for many types of health data. So we went from obviously clinical data to richer data. Like you can get imaging data, you can get voice data, video data, and all of that you can apply AI, multimodality of the AI, and make sense of it. So I built Doc AI around that, which ended up getting acquired by ShareCare, where I spent some time applying some of this AI at scale. And then obviously that led me to Lyric right now, where, you know, we look at all of the AI that's worked on the clinical side. How do we bring similar AI for some of the payment side of things? So that's my story so far. So happy to double click on anything you're interested in.
No, that's great. Thank you. And it's awesome how you jumped into healthcare and you notice, wow, what a mess. And luckily, you know, the technology evolved to the point where AI was right around the corner, or as you saw it, ahead of its time, you know, like, hey, AI is going to be able to review all this spaghetti and kind of organize it in proper channels. In terms of looking at AI, how is it playing a role in improving payment accuracy? Like, we're using AI in so many different ways in healthcare. Let's focus on the payment accuracy element, that part that Lyric really focuses on. How is it improving payment accuracy that, you know, in the end, it's going to benefit those big three Ps, the payer, the provider, and the patient?
Great question. So to me, payment accuracy is sort of the primary focus for every healthcare stakeholder. Right. So what payment accuracy really means is it's beyond just editing. Editing means that a set of claims come in. You look at whether they're authorized to be paid out right away based on a corpus of rules that you apply. And then after that, you basically get to the payment part of it. Right. So it's been historically done that way. But I think payment accuracy is much bigger than that. It's sort of the holistic set of tasks that need to happen to sort of look at the overall cost of care. Mm-hmm. That means that you're not just looking at a point of time of claims coming in, but you're understanding whether, you know, a person's health is improving over time. If there are high-risk members, that can you take them and sort of give them care sooner? Can you do quicker follow-ups? Can you get them to a point where their disease burden goes down, right? So think of this payment accuracy as sort of the end-to-end care management, so to speak. And if we make this more efficient and faster, there is guarantee that we will see a reduction in the burden in the overall healthcare costs. Because the sooner we get people to care, the right care at the right time, and the faster we can improve their whole sort of payment accuracy process, it should improve the overall outcomes, right? So this is sort of the fundamental a rubric, let's say, in which we can do. Now, I talked about efficiency and I talked about administrative burdens. I think these are two key areas where Lyric is primarily focused on applying AI. So far, if you think about how these things have been done in the world of payment accuracy, there's a lot of human-to-human interaction. There's a lot of messy world of data that we talked about. It still continues to exist. And so a lot of the archaic workflows have been built where there is no consistent flow or a constant flow of information to make decisions on. So they get stopped at different points in time. With AI, we are seeing the sort of, especially with generative AI and some of the machine learning models that we built for cost of care, we can already bring to bear a more efficient workflows where decisions can be augmented for humans to make decisions faster, especially because you don't have to wait for unstructured information to be read by a human. These things can now be accelerated through AI, which means we can build faster workflows and new workflows. The idea here is that with the cost of care models, with generative AI models, large language models, small language models, we can build newer workflows that would accelerate the whole area of payment accuracy and lead to a faster cost of care solution for our customers. That's how I'm looking at it.
No, that's great. Now, looking at the implementation and adoption of AI within healthcare, you talked about the data. You talked about folks having to look through that data and using AI, the various levels of AI, to kind of separate and kind of make sense out of this mess we call data. But there's one thing that has to be built in that we've heard from so many different people, the idea of responsible AI. So let's talk about that for a little while. Like, what is responsible AI, not only from a Lyric perspective, but from overall, and how important is it to be baked in to the planning and the process when you start the idea of implementing AI into a business structure?
Again, a great question. I think responsible AI, and specifically in healthcare, I would say this is an absolute need. And the way I would define responsible AI is the process of how we build, test, and deploy AI solutions. It's not just models, because an AI solution is a complete end-to-end solution that has some machine learning models, some deep learning models, but also like the entire experience and workflows and tooling that we need to build around it, right? So all of them have to have some level of like validation and visibility in the spectrum of what I call as the responsible AI. So the core ideas that form responsible AI are things like, you know, what is it ethical to build this AI? Mm-hmm. Is there transparency in the AI that we build? Is the AI accountable in some sense, meaning that what we are deploying, where is the accountability for it? So I'll talk about that in a bit. And then finally, is it equitable, right? So is it making decisions that's fair, which is a much harder problem if you think about it, but it needs to be factored in while we actually build it. So ethics is very clear. I think there is clearly good lines that describe what an AI should do and what AI should not do. So using AI for evil reasons is obviously not okay, right? So for example, in Lyric, we care about AI that assists humans in making better decisions. It's not making the decision as a machine, but it's about like explaining these decisions better to people who are looking for, if there's a rule-based system that makes decision, how do you explain that back better? So that's an aid tool that aids to lower the burden, for example. So that's sort of an ethical call we've taken. And transparency is about explainability of the AI, right? So when an AI model makes decision, can we trace it back to the rules, policies, governance, and other criteria that was factored in to make that decision, right? So this explainability is very important in healthcare. Black box models generally like end up where you can't reason with it. So we try to avoid such models. We strongly enforce like transparency is there from day one. And accountability, as I said, like when you deploy an AI model, how do you know that it's actually working right? Is it making the right decision? Is it making decision on data that it was sort of sampled and trained on, right? So you can't be making decisions on things that it has never seen before, especially from a sampling perspective. So to do all of these, we actually go quite deep, right? So we start with the data sets, we curate the data sets, and we are looking for the right distributions in the data to make sure that we can train on that data. We start by actually getting synthetic data and de-identified data. So we make sure that in the de-identified data, it's certified, meaning that there is no representation of certain marginal things that we should not be training the AI on so that it can be reversed into. So there's a lot of privacy aspects as well that go in. But during the training phase, there are about like 30 to 50 metrics that we continuously measure. And then it goes to a point where it's given to a human. There is a human or a clinic, there, what we generally call as an expert, if it's a clinician or if it's a subject matter expert, they're in the loop to validate how the AI is doing. So we do a small pilot to make sure that it actually works correctly and that feedback data is incorporated back in the retraining of the model. So none of this sees production until it has gone through rigorous training, testing, validation with human feedback. And then finally, when we go to production, it's not done and dusted, right? So we have to continuously monitor these similar metrics, but there are additional metrics we see on top of that. So we are measuring, like, is the data drifting? Is the model drifting? Should the model be actually even inferencing in new type of data that we've never seen before? Things like that is what awareness is. So you will see that we put in a lot of effort from training, validation, and getting the right people involved. That's part of all the full spectrum of how responsible AI should work.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, it's checks and balances on steroids, really. And I'm really impressed how you were able to break that down and like every single nook and cranny is being kind of evaluated, tested, and then kind of repeated back. So everyone knows that if there is a fallout, you guys can easily identify where it is. But it's really impressive and very, just really mind-boggling and so much work. It's not just, hey, throw AI at it. You know, it's not just that. You can't just do that.
No, it's never like that. I call it as we need to continuously babysit the AI. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite phrase. Because it's not, you can't put something out there and then call it done. There is a lot of overarching governance, principles, frameworks, and continuous observation that happens with it.
Speaking with Akshay Sharma, Chief AI Officer of Lyric here on the Collective Voice of Health IT this week, 2023, you know, I think it was even earlier than that, generative AI, most, I guess, popularized by ChatGPT, really just kind of exploded, you know, just as everything. Heck, my wife uses it for practically everything now. You know, just ask ChatGPT, you know, whether it's writing a paper for a kid or figuring out a recipe or working through healthcare. Where do you see, you know, that kind of LLM such as ChatGPT taking us in terms of healthcare? I've already seen it being used in so many different ways. What are some of the ways that you've seen it, and what are some of the ways that you'd love to see ChatGPT or LLMs take healthcare?
This is a great point because you're right that it was 2023 was sort of the tipping point or sort of massive awareness of what transformer models on language can do. But I was I had the privilege to like observe it much before, maybe even GPT-2 and earlier days. We could see that transformer model in the paper was written and BERT and early models that were there, it was already phenomenal that we could throw a corpus of like unstructured text and get some generative aspects. And I still remember in GPT-2, when I was like sort of working with that on the local stuff, obviously its ability to generate concepts and stuff was very limited, but we knew that, you know, applying brute force on transformer model and throwing a lot of computation, this can get to a high level of sophistication. So the OpenAI's journey on proving that out is phenomenal. So where I see this going for us in healthcare is exactly where, you know, like we are applying some of this and what I've seen in the past, right? So ChatGPT obviously is a flavor of how the language model can be used. So it's a more of a chat interface, but the core principle or tenet of that is the language model itself, right? So there are many, many variants to it. Somebody like, say, OpenAI is using a very big, massive model, like hundreds of billions, if not like more, even trillions of parameters now to train models. But there's a variant of that, which is like, you know, small language models. So between 7 billion parameters to 15 billion parameters. So we are doubling down on models of that size because a large part of healthcare is still driven by policies. Enforcing these policies via manual and automated workflows, significant human-to-human administrative communication, and it's very highly service-oriented. But what these models can do is they have a compressed view of the domain of the data they're trained on, right? So if I can take this model, I don't need to for it to have the whole world knowledge, but focus it on the set of data that healthcare data cares about, policies, governance, clinical data, claims data. There's not many variants of it, right? So we sort of make it learn on that. Then what happens after that is we can use it to like sort of automate some of the tedious tasks. For example, we can use it for prior auth reviews, right? So where you get like a fax of some medical information and some prior history, it takes a clinician quite some time to like digest that and read that to make a decision. Why can't we automate all of that when we know what are the triggers to say what should be approved, right? So for the things that have to be approved anyway, let the AI as an agent do it. And now that's possible, right? So Where we are personally using it in Lyric is to sort of stay on top of the constantly changing policies, right? So we there's more than like a million documents that our clinical team have to sample. And obviously that's impossible for humans to sample. So they do like selective filtering. And it takes months, if not years, to be on top of that. Of course, Lyric has had the luxury of being on top of this for 25 years. So we have a corpus of like how these decisions can be made. We're just automating all of this where it can do like 10,000 to a million times faster than a human with an accuracy to do it as good as human, if not better, right? And this is what we are seeing. So staying on top of policies, applying these to workflows internally, and bringing experiences such as co-pilots, which can be very valuable for our customers over time.
Fantastic. Now, when we were talking about responsible AI, you mentioned a term I want to kind of focus on for a second. It's called privacy. Talk to me about data privacy and as an aspect to the overall AI ecosystem.
Great. And I would say privacy in AI is one thing, and privacy for healthcare and AI is even further important, right? So privacy in general has been somewhat ambiguous when it comes to AI so far, right? So there is still a lot of debate on what the large language models have been trained on, what are the rights on it, what data is represented there, can it be poisoned to sort of reverse the data back? There's a lot of these questions ruminating. And when you think about that in a very regulated domain like healthcare, where there is really sensitive data, there is patient data, there is patient auxiliary data. So there could be data on demographics. There are things that are around health that generally can be used to triangulate things. We need to be very, very careful in what we build as AI, right? So privacy is like a first principle of how to think about building AI. And what I mean by that is it starts with how do you select the data sets, right? So the first thing to make sure is that there is a distribution in the data set that is amenable for us to like go build the AI with. That specifically means we cannot have representations in data sets that can be then triangulated back by poisoning the model. So that's the first thing. The second thing I would say with the privacy is in general, AI can, we build and train AI, but we build it in sort of ways where we have generally available Lyric data that is something that Lyric has built as its proprietary IP. We train that models and language models and machine learning models on top of that. That is on all the data that we have. But when we actually want to deploy this to our customer, we need to run the AI very containerized and sort of isolated for customer data. So we are not commingling not just the data, but even the AI inferences as well, right? So that is the concept behind privacy. And in order to crack that, we have had to do several breakthroughs, including being able to take small language models and run it in any environment where our customers have their private data and most sensitive data. So this idea that build and push all the data and centralize that is sort of antagonistic to the idea of privacy. And so we have to sort of go and meet our customer needs and build it in such ways that it highly sensitive data remains where it is and the data doesn't leave those environments and the AI goes to the data. So we've built like tools like federated learning, edge computing in order to do these kind of things.
Excellent. Now, we're looking at AI touching so many elements of healthcare, so many elements of our daily lives. From a healthcare perspective, are there any elements within healthcare that hasn't been touched by AI that you're thinking, you know what would work right here? AI. You know, like is there anything out there that like, you know, this could be so much more efficient if we can factor in some artificial intelligence?
Yeah, I think there are many, many, many areas in AI, in healthcare that could do good with the love of AI. So, for example, I think with what we're seeing at Lyric, being able to like understand millions of documents and make sense with it and reason with that document to build experiences. The same problem exists when you think about like providers, right? So they deal with humongous amounts of contracts that they have to deal with different insurance companies. They have to like look at different contracts that are applicable based on patient experiences. So now we can actually build using the AI, we can simplify sort of what it means when you go to a point of care, right? So it's not like people sitting there in front desk trying to call someone to see if you're eligible for a particular service, what it would cost for you. None of those things can be answered easily today based on the information they have, but this should become an easy solution to solve given all the inputs available, right? Your explanation of benefits, your provider contract, your insurance policies, these can be fed into an AI and it can actually tell you what you should be, what you're eligible for, what you're not eligible for, and how much it should cost you based on your past history, right? So this is an area that I think should be solved and will be solved in some point in time. And I see a similar counterpoint around like sort of member experiences, around price transparency. There is a lot of information available around machine readable pricing data, but that's not really personal to me because what it's missing is what my plan and my employer have agreed to like get, sort of insure me for, right? So that's the missing piece. Now we can actually marry that with the price transparency data and give you a better experience as a member. I need to know in advance where I should go get care. So these are the types of things that I think are immediate. In my past, I did a lot of AI for observational clinical trials. We used video data and audio data. I saw the early signs of that becoming like pretty big. So multimodal data for healthcare, bringing your imaging data, genetics data, your clinical data, and using it in a multi-omic setting to find your longitudinal care. We were onto something there at DocAI that did not yet finish. I think that would be cracked this year in this decade, in my opinion.
You're ahead of the game, actually. Ahead of the game.
I've been fortunate enough to be working with really smart people. So.
Fantastic. Yeah, hey, you're one of those smart people as well, definitely. Speaking with Akshay Sharma, Chief AI Officer with Lyric, I'm going to leave you with the last word. Feel free to plug anything you'd like. Let our audience know, you know, what else they should learn about AI or just Lyric or Akshay.
Thank you. It was really exciting. I love the questions you asked me. So one of the things that I get asked is, you know, how can I participate in this thing, right? So either I'm an engineer or I'm like, you know, I have some background in coding, or you don't have to even be somebody who's written code, right? So, but you can be part of this. This goes to the bigger concept of like, how can every company become sort of an AI consumer? Potentially an AI producer. So my short answer is the generative AI and language model to me is the first science of AI that is very, very practical in taking something and making it useful in your day-to-day life, right? I mean, the version of ChatGPT is great because you're chatting with a chatbot, but that's just one modality of how to think about this AI. What this AI can do is you should like just understand what your day looks like, how much of manual effort and work that you're doing that's repeatable, that's rote, that looks like a chore. Those are some of the things that this AI can be applicable to. So what I suggest is get in the game, learn little small things. There is enough material out there, deeplearning.ai by Andrew and so many other free courses that are out there that can get you from 0 to 80. You're not building your own original model. You're applying that to solve a problem. And this AI actually works, right? So if you use it for yourself, you become a practitioner. And that's how you can think about transforming anything around you, your day-to-day jobs, because it's not going to replace humans. It's only going to give you back time to do and focus on things that matter to you. That's what my answer would be for anyone asking me that question.
That's awesome. Yeah, like I think the fear is they're taking our jobs. Like, no, you can control it. Like you can control it. And of course, at the very end when, you know, like Terminator takes over the world and everything. But we're not going to talk about that, though. We're not going to talk about that.
No. Yeah.
AI is still friendly. Akshay Sharma, it's been a pleasure chatting with you today on the Collective Voice of Health IT.
Thank you, Michael. Great being here.
Awesome. This has been, as I said, the Collective Voice of Health IT, a WEDI podcast, where the healthcare IT community connects, collaborates, and creates solutions for a better health system. Find all our episodes as well as information on our association at our website, wedi.org. Thank you for joining us and be safe.